Welcome to B'nai Yeshurun's Base Medrash program, special programming for the coming month of Elul, a special series for Elul. And for those who were here during the summer, we have a tremendous Hakar Zotov to Elul, who takes away from his busy schedule to really uplift and teach our community. And we are most appreciative of the time he gives us, both on Shabbos and during the year on his shiurim. The series will be over a three-series part on Tefillah, Elul, and Rabbi Wall's shiur tonight is Rambam's analysis of six spiritual roadblocks that preclude tshuva, the Kabbalah of the Rabbi Wall.
Good evening, everyone. We want to apologize. Actually, the next two Thursday nights I'll be out of the country, but we're going to have tonight, and then we'll do Thursday night, the 30th of August, and Thursday night, the 6th of September. This evening is a fascinating topic. Why? Because there's a unique perek in the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva, perek Dalet. That's going to be our topic this evening. The Rambam talks about Chav Dalet Dvarim. There are 24 phenomena that are ma'akev, that preclude or make tshuva very difficult. This is one of these prakim of the Rambam that ultimately, if we could memorize it and keep it in our wallet, in our back pocket, you know, it's one of the things that we take with us throughout the year. It's unique because it's to a certain degree, it's its own section. You don't need the first three prakim of Hilchos Tshuva. After this parak, the Rambam gets into the issues of free will, Bechira Chavshis. You don't need that. It's almost a standalone parak. The Rav used to say, and he said this in the name of his father, his grandfather, that he thinks the Rambam broke up Hilchos Tshuva into 10 prakim. That what? That each day during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, each day of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, you can analyze one parak. And as we crescendo and build up to the great experience of Yom Kippur, ultimately internalize the whole theme and message of tshuva, which is so profound and so crucial to our existence as Jews and to our existence as human beings. Anyways, why do we call it the six roadblocks that preclude tshuva? Because the Rambam, in this parak, he breaks up the 24 phenomena into six categories. There are six halachos, and they're fascinating. And we're going to put a little bit more emphasis on some of the halachas than others, but let's start. The Rambam introduces the parak, and he says the following. There are 24 phenomena that are significant stumbling blocks that preclude and make it very difficult for a person to do tshuva. And he breaks them into six categories. If it's okay for our purposes, we're going to skip at the beginning Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. We're going to come back to the first three halachas. I apologize. We're going to skip Parak Aleph and Beis, and we're going to start with Halacha Gimel. Skipping Halacha Aleph and Beis and starting with Halacha Gimel. What's the third category? The third of, so to speak, the six. The Rambam says the following. Umehem, we could categorize five of these 24 phenomena under the following rubric. Ha'osa osam, someone who engages in these practices, e'ef sharlo she'yashuv b'tshuva gemura. It's almost impossible to do complete tshuva. Why? Lefi she'hem avonu she'bein adam l'chavero. There happen to be sins or transgressions between one human being and another. Ve'eino yodea chavero she'chata lo, k'dei she'yachzer lo, o yisham imenu limcha lo. You and I are all familiar with the fact that if I sin against another human being, I can pour my heart out on Yom Kippur, and it's not going to help. Like a toit in bankus, for gornish helfen. Because unless I approach a person that I wronged or that I offended, I can cry from today till tomorrow to the Ribon Sholem. I have to make amends. In fact, the Rav used to speak about the Lashon in the eighth parak of Masechet Yuma. It's not enough to ask for forgiveness. You have to be meratza. You have to restore the relationship to the person before going back to the way it was before the sin. You have to restore their confidence in you, their trust in you, their sense of being open and not being threatened by you before you offended and hurt them. So what are these five phenomena that are averos ben adam l'chavero that it's very difficult to do tshuva for? Why? As the Rambam says to repeat, the eino yodea chavero, you don't know who you've sinned against. What are the five? The Rambam starts. Hamekalel es harabim. You curse a group, a large group, a rabim of people. V'lo kilo adam yadua kidei sheyishal mimenu kapara. I didn't curse or attack or say something derogatory about an individual who I can approach that individual. I'll give you an example. As you know, we moved here very recently, not even 2 years ago. We moved here from the West Coast in California. In Beverly Hills, there's a very large community of Persian immigrants, Persian refugees, who after the downfall of the Shah at the hands of the Ayatollah and at the hands of radical Shia, they were able to get their money out. Some of them could not get their funds out, and they settled in Beverly Hills. Tehranis, Shirazis, Isfahanis. Many of you are familiar with Great Neck, which has Mashadis, you know, Kashanians, but in Beverly Hills, for the most part, it was those three areas, Tehran, Shiraz, and Isfahan. And the Persians, because they're a product of their environment, of the Persian-Iranian culture that they are a part of, no different than we who are a product of American environment. Through osmosis, we adopt some of the mores, mentalities, and values of the community around us. They did business, they conducted affairs very differently than Ashkenazim. Many manifestations. I'll give you an example. And this is not limited to the Persian Gulf. People used to attack Yasser Arafat. He's a liar, he's a thief, he's a criminal. He duped Yitzhak Rabin, he duped Shimon Peres. There was an Oslo Accord, and then after that accord he undermined it, and he turned Israel, and he cost us over 1,000 casualties with the Intifada. People in the Middle East, they're not upset with Arafat. They're upset with Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin. Why? Because in the Middle East, part of the culture is, it's not the Western norm of your word is your bond. It's not the Jewish concept of Dover Emes Bilvavo, that there's a truth norm, there's a truth standard that we live by. No. The culture is, after you sign the contract, after you make the deal, in front of witnesses, taking an oath and everything else, that's when the negotiation begins. So after the signing on the White House lawn, that means absolutely nothing to the culture where Yasser Arafat is coming from. And the fact that he violated every aspect of that covenant, he's not a liar, he's not a snake, he's not a criminal. That's called doing business. And shame on the Jews that we actually thought that he would abide by a Western standard or by a Jewish truth norm. Shame on us that we were foolish enough to think such a thing. And using that example, because very often you'd have people who, after doing a deal, they would start the negotiation. After the house was acquired, the piece of real estate was acquired, after the company was bought, that's when the negotiations really started. And people would be furious. Another example. We have a concept here at B'nai Yeshurun that you pay what you can afford, but everyone pays something and you commit and you support the shul. And you support the shul not only with dues, but with a dinner, you support the shul in other areas. They're coming from a culture where it was unique, distinct individuals who were responsible for the community. And everyone else would come, would take, and they weren't viewed as schnorrers and takers. That was the culture. So when they come to a shul, and they receive, and they eat at every kiddush and every shalashudas, and they're not willing to give anything, even though they may be very wealthy people, that is not a disgusting activity. That was part of the culture. The Ashkenazim didn't appreciate that because we're coming from an Ashkenazic / American culture. So what would happen? People would curse them. They would be so infuriated and they'd say terrible things about the Persian Jews. Well, now I've got a question. You make an indictment against the Persian Jews, or you make an indictment against the Hungarians. You don't know where every Persian Jew lives. What, you're going to knock on every door in Great Neck? You're going to knock on every door in Beverly Hills? And what about the Persians that are still in Iran? And what about the Persians who may be settled in Columbus or Detroit? How do you do tshuva? When you whitewash the Persian Jews, or when you whitewash the Hungarian Jews, or those who don't like the German Jews, you make a knock about the Yekis, or you make a knock about the Galicianas and about, let's say, their sense of largesse. All these stereotypes. How do you ever do tshuva for something like that? If I attack an individual, it's one thing. I don't know who's a Galiciana. I don't know who's a descendant of a Galiciana. What about the Galicianas who died, who are no longer alive, that I can't ask mechila from? How do you ever do tshuva when you whitewash a whole group like that? That's example number one of mikala asarabim. Number two, the second case that the Rambam gives is a cholek imaganav. Someone who does business, cholek literally means divides up the assets with the ganav. I'll give you an example. You don't want to pay for a brand new Bose speaker system for your automobile. You love Mozart. You love Tchaikovsky. But why should you pay retail? Because as soon as it's put into the car, the value of that Bose speaker system is going to be worth about a third of what you paid for at retail. So what do? You go to a certain, let's just say, a certain auto parts dealer who's not listed with the Better Business Bureau. We refer to them as a chop shop. What happens? He doesn't ask the group who's bringing the car to him, where did you get this automobile from? He's only interested in the parts. You know full well this guy is not an authorized Bose speaker salesperson. And you're not asking questions, where did you get this speaker system from? How can you do that? Because what are you doing? You're mechazek the avarian. You're strengthening the guy who sins, i.e. who? The man running the chop shop who's dealing in stolen goods. And he's being, by him having you as a consumer, and by him having a market to sell these goods, it's mechazek the ganavim. Because now he's what? He's a consumer from the ganavim. So how do you do tshuva from that? You don't know how far, to what degree you've strengthened the criminal, strengthened somebody who's engaged in a nefarious, disgusting, inappropriate way of earning a living. You don't know who the victim was that this speaker was stolen from, so you can't ask mechila from the victim. How do you do tshuva from this? That's the second case he gives. Let's read it inside. Lefisha eino yodea geneva zu shomihu. You don't know who the victim was. The ode. Shehu machzik yad haganav machfio. You're mechazik. You strengthen him. And you encourage him to continue to do more acts of geneva. I want to give another example of this. Skipping down. Oh, let's do gimel. Hamotzei aveda ve'eino machriz aleha ad sheyachzir lebaleha. You find a lost object. It's not a lost object like a $20 bill, which is generic, that a person's going to give up hope on, that they lost on the street. That you have every right to keep. It's one thing if you find a $20 bill in front of somebody's house. You have an obligation to knock on their door and say, hey, I found it in front of your house. Chances are it's theirs. But let's say you find it on the street. However, something else. You find something that is unique and distinct. It's discernible. It's what we call the second paragraph above in the Tziyah, Yesh Bo Simanim. It's got Simanim Mufakim. And you don't announce it. For instance, if you found it in the coat room, a gorgeous canali outer coat that you found here in Bnei Yeshurun. Now, there aren't that many of the parishioners or guests here that have canali outer coats. If you put up a sign or you'd let Debbie know in the office, chances are they would have, what? They would have called the office and you'd be able to restore it to them. But you don't do that. And a year, two, three goes by, and at this point they've already given up. They've given up hope, bought a new outer coat. The reason, how do you do tshuva from this? Because it's come to a point where they've given up all hope, they've moved on, maybe they live in a different community at this point, they're not calling the shul anymore. How do you ever get tshuva from something that doesn't belong to you? Because you don't know who to return it to. Skip to the fifth example of halacha gimel. Amikabel shochad lahatos din. You accept the bribe when you are sitting in judgment. Now, we're going to talk about a simple case, the Rambam's case of a dayan. But the Rambam, you could extrapolate, applies to other cases. Let's talk about the basic case. You're a dayan. It's not that one of the parties paid you off to judge their case. But let's say the following. They asked you to be Masada Kedushin for their child's wedding. And there are many, many others who could have had this honor. Let's say the following. They gave you a contract. You are the contract. Or they sent their kids to your institution and they pay full tuition. There are many, many forms of shochad, of bribery. It's not just the blatant trust giving you a stack of bills or writing you a check. There are many more subtle forms of that. Now the word, the Gemara says, what's shochad? It's almost an acronym for what? Shehuchad. You become one with the person who's giving you the bribe. Meaning what? The worst negia, the worst subjective bias a person can have is on a subconscious or on an unconscious level. When I'm indebted, when I'm bound, we use the term mishubad. When I have a certain shibud or a certain indebtedness of being bound to somebody on a subconscious or unconscious level, I myself have no clue. I don't know to what extent. I don't know to what extent I'm going to pervert or manipulate things, lose my objectivity. So the case the Rambam gives is I'm a dayan and I'm sitting and adjudicating a financial case, or a divorce settlement, or a lawsuit. But there are other cases. Let's say I'm not a dayan. Let's say I play a role. I give out contracts. We're talking about a person's livelihood. I steer business in a certain direction. If I'm on the take from someone, and that's why it's interesting, the AMA, they don't even allow now the physicians to be taken out for dinner or to be given tickets to a ball game. You can't even give a doctor today a beautiful lacrosse or a Mont Blanc pen. You can't give these things. Why? Because when the doctor who's supposed to be treating their patients, utilizing and giving the ideal and proper appropriate medicine, if that doctor who we're replacing for the dayan at this point can't be objective, because the salesperson is giving them floor seats, you know, let's say it's a doctor in Florida, they get floor seats to watch LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Unzere Chevra. How can they be objective when it comes to which medicine they're going to use or give out? This is the issue. Another example, a doctor. There are different rehab centers. There are different home health rehab centers. When the doctor is, so to speak, on the take, and it doesn't mean that they're on the take because it's not explicit, it's subtle. So subjectively, that subconscious, unconscious bias, to what degree are you really taking care of your patients? That's this idea here. So who do you ask mechila from? The patients that didn't get the right treatment? You don't know to what degree they didn't get the right treatment. You don't know which patients were affected by the wrong, so to speak, shidduch being made between the rehab center or the wrong med. You don't know to what degree. How do you ever ask mechila? This is this issue. That is the halacha gimel. Halacha Dalet is the next category. Umehen chamisha devarim. Ha'osa osan ein cheskasa l'shuv mehen. If someone engages in these practices, chances are, the chazaka, the assumption is, a person is not going to do tshuva from these phenomena. Why not? Shehu, why? L'fi shehem devarim kalim be'enei rov ha'adam. Because they're light. If I don't think I'm doing anything wrong, how can I do tshuva? But if I don't think there's anything wrong with this, how in the world can I ever do tshuva from it? So what are some of the examples? Vinim sachote, turns out I'm sinning, but I don't assume that I'm sinning. So what are some of the examples of this? Let's skip to Gimel. Alright, let's do Beis. Hamishtamesh ba'avot al-sha'ani. Somebody has a collateral. A collateral of a poor person. Collateral cannot be used. It's there as collateral and nothing else. But I use it. I say, look, come on, this is an implement. I'm not affecting the value of this implement by using it. The Rambam gives the example of a shovel, you know, a heavy-duty piece of equipment. But it's gzeila. If I don't have permission to use something, we say, Hashoel Shalom Midas is a gosler. If I borrow something of yours and I don't have permission, I'm a gosler. Borrowing without permission is thievery. But I'm not stealing it. I'm not taking it from him. It's his. If he pays me back the money, he'll get the mashkon, he'll get the collateral back. So if I don't think I'm doing anything wrong, here I'm involved in an act of geneva. The next example, Gimel, that he gives, is something that's very challenging in the society that we live in. Madison Avenue, the whole marketing world, has learned that the way you sell any product is with sex. It's having a beautiful woman, having less clothing than on her body than, you know, I should say more exposure on her body than she has clothing. That's the way you sell things. And we see it on the bus ads, we see it in the advertisements, we see it in the newspapers, we see it all over the place. So what happens? To quote the Rambam, Hamistakel ba'arayos, ma'al data she'in b'kach klum. Mistakel, by the way, means to stare. If you happen to see it, you know, you couldn't help it. You happen to see it. So you look the other way or you focus in a different place. That's not the sin. The sin is lo tatsuru. We say it in Shema every morning, every evening. Not to focus, not to stare, not to concentrate. Hamistakel ba'arayos, ma'al data she'in b'kach klum. You assume there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I'll give you an example. I leave the house pretty early in the morning in Teaneck, so to avoid the traffic, I daven at a minyan at Meridian Capital, the 7 o'clock minyan downtown. So what's happening when you're driving to work? That's when everybody's out jogging, you know, from May through October. All right, if they're meshuggahs, you know, they're crazy enough to jog in December, they're pretty, you know, tightly packed. But in this time of year, they're out there. You see the drivers. You see the drivers not paying attention to the road, bumping into each other, veering, because they're so busy looking at the joggers, you know, the female joggers, they're not paying attention to the west side, to the street, to the traffic lights, to the people in front of them. So what does a person say? Shu'omer. V'chi ba'alti o karavti etzlo? Did I engage in any physical act? Did I violate any impropriety sexually? All I did was look. For who eino yodea she ri'iyaseinayim avon gadol. Rambam uses an interesting phrase. It's a great sin. She goremes v'gufan sha'arayas. The Rambam says it leads to all kinds of things. Leads to masturbation. Sometimes it ultimately will lead to impropriety, sexual improprieties. I would say even before that, person who stares at the opposite gender in a sexual way, what happens is, and this has been, I think, one of the great tragedies of what Madison Avenue has done, and I think it's, you know, people talk about the feminist revolution of the 70s. I think, personally, the feminist revolution, if anything, it turned the clock back on women, because it never addressed the real issue, and that is that a woman is a subject, not an object. The problem with staring at a woman, even if you don't touch her, is that you've turned a human being from a subject into an object. And God forbid that we look at any other human being as an object. You're not looking at that human being for their intellect. You're not looking at that human being for their chesed, for their personality. You're looking at that human being as nothing more than a sex toy. Even if you don't touch that human being. And that's a tragedy. It's a tragedy when you take another human being and turn them into an object. And you say, I didn't do anything. I didn't touch her. I didn't engage in impropriety. And if you don't realize that there's something very wrong with that, how do you ever do tshuva? The next one is fascinating. And it's very appropriate right now, this time, as we're building up towards, we have less than 100 days towards the November election. Hamiskabed Diklon Chavero, the Dalet, the fourth example the Rambam gives. Let's translate that phrase. Hamit Kabed Diklon Chavero. The word Kabed means heavy. Kavod comes from the word Kabed. I build myself up. I, you know, make myself important through the treating lightly, through the denigration of another. Think about the ads that take place. Think about competition when we speak about. And by the way, there are many, many amazing things about this community. But in Teaneck, to a much greater degree than other places, Teaneck is in a very high madrega in this area. You don't hear people putting down the other shuls, building up their shul by putting down the other shuls, or by comparing and contrasting, you know, to build themselves up. You don't hear that to a great degree with the day schools. But in the name of God Almighty, in the name of the Torah, in the name of Yerushalayim, very often what happens is we denigrate the other institutions by building ourselves up through their denigration. It's true with competition. It's true not only in terms of retailers or wholesalers, it's true with the professionals. Attorneys, physicians, accountants. What do you have? You have every right. I want to apologize. You have every right to build yourself up. This is our product. It's the greatest product out there because of reasons X, Y, and Z. Our furniture, our clothing, our service is this, that, and the other. And we think the reason you should work with us, the reason that you should become part of our family, part of our community, is because of the service you'll get, because of the consistency you'll get, because of whatever, whatever. The quality you'll get, the price you'll get, whatever it is. You have every right to build yourself up. But never by using the other as a contrast. You know, well, look at what the others do. There's a famous case. Rabbi Aaron Levine wrote this up in one of his great works on economics and business law. Famous case between is it called Children's Tylenol? And it's called Orajel. Is it Baby Orajel or just Orajel? Orajel did a famous commercial. Well, what did they do? They showed the following scenario. Two babies crying, and then they said, I think 10 minutes later, the baby who was given baby Orajel is happy and smiling, and the one with Children's Tylenol is crying. You owe it to your child. You owe it to your grandchild. You're going to let them sit and suffer like that? Well, what they didn't tell you was, yes, baby Orajel, because of the nature of the compound of that medicine, that chemical compound, it was fast-acting. But what they didn't tell you is that the Children's Tylenol, that compound kept the kid out of pain, because the baby Orajel, as fast as it worked and kicked in, that's how fast, so to speak, it dissipated. Whereas the Children's Tylenol, it took a longer time to kick in, but it was much more long-lasting. And they hadn't, at that time in history, they had not had a compound that could be fast-acting and long-lasting at the same time. But what was the point? And they actually were fined on this ad. They were fined by the US FDA for false advertising. You can't build up yourself by putting down the others. And that's a big problem. If you say, look, what am I doing? Let's read the Rambam. Omer belibo sheino chet. I say to myself, it's not a sin. Lefi shein chaver omei chem. He's not there. Below he gila boshes v'lo bisho. I'm not humiliating him. I'm not humiliating the competition. It's not like, you know, I sit there and they feel terrible. They don't necessarily even know. They may never know what I said. So why? I didn't hurt them. I didn't humiliate them. Ela arach ma'asav atovim b'chach ma'asav l'mul ma'asav chavero chamasav. What did I do? I just compared and contrasted my virtues, my product's virtues, my company's virtues to his or her virtues. Kedei she'yira michlalo shu mechubad b'chaver bazli. And it's a big problem, because what's going to happen? We're going to read, we're going to hear, we're going to see campaigns right now over the course of the next 100 days. And we're going to see a lot of that. And the problem is, again, via osmosis, we say in Yiddish, Was ist Christusach, ist Jedusach. What happens out there in the world around us, via osmosis, we internalize. And we lose that sensitivity. But God forbid, you have no right to build yourself up through the denigration or through the contrast of someone else. In the final example of Halacha Dalet, is a choshed ksheven. I sit, and by the way, it's every one of us. You know what we do? Every one of us is a judge, is a dayan. Even though you haven't been appointed by the president, you haven't been appointed or elected, every one of us sits as a judge. There's a famous verse in Parshas Kedoshim. It says, "Bitzedek tishbot amisecha." Let's repeat. "Bitzedek tishbot." With tzedek, with a sense of justice, you should judge your fellow member of the nation, your member of the Am. Now, what is that pasuk? So if you are of the opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin that there's such a thing as a yachid mumche, and that you can have one judge, you can type that pasuk, it's referring to the judge. If you hold there's a minimum of three dayanim, otherwise it doesn't constitute judgment, if you hold that there's a minimum of three, so how are you going to explain that pasuk? It's not talking to a judge. It's b'lashon yachid, it's in the singular. And even if you hold that there's such a thing as a yachid mumche, even if you hold that, there's a second explanation. And that's the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And it's something we're all familiar with. Every one of us is a judge. Every one of us is a judge. And we're constantly, and we can't help it, making judgments. When I look at you, how do you hold your shoulders? What are you wearing? Okay? What kind of clothing are you wearing? Okay? How do you, cut your hair and don't cut your hair? We're constantly making judgments about each other. The way you speak, how you articulate yourself, what shul you go to, who your friends are, where you vacation. We're always sitting in judgment. In what the Bitzedek Tishpot Amisecha says, and you're all familiar with, have the Dan Kol Adam Lekav Skos. If someone is Amitecha, if someone is Ose Maase Amcha, someone is engaged or conducts himself like a halachic person, ethically and morally like a halachic person, theologically like a halachic person, you have an obligation of Bitzedek Tishpot Amisecha to be Dan Lam Lekav Skos, to judge them meritoriously. But what happens? Not so simple. I'll tell you why it's not so simple. You're all familiar with two halakhic categories. There's a category called chashad. Chashad will translate as suspicion. There's another category called marit ayin, or in English, moris ayin. Who's one of the most famous Jews? Moris ayin. Who's moris ayin? What's moris ayin? What's that? So chashad means a person cannot do something if others are around and may see it, because they may judge that person the wrong way. Marisayim means afilu b'chadre chadarim. Even if no one's around, even if you're in a sealed room, which is surrounded by another sealed room, chadre chadarim, you can't do this. Why? The Torah says, quoting the verse by B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvein, v'hiyisem nikiyam mehashem u'mi'Yisrael. You, the B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvein, you need to be snow white. You need to be clean, you need to be innocent, you need to look innocent in the eyes not only of God Almighty who knows the truth, but in the eyes of your fellow Jews. So even if you're doing something that's acceptable, let's take a simple example, okay? Go back to 1965. You've got coffee, Rich. Okay? Not everybody knows that, and it wasn't a common thing, that soy milk would be used with Fleischer of material. So if you're going to use Coffee Rich, you've got to put the container of Coffee Rich on the table. No one should be choshed you're having meat and milk together. Okay? Gemara gives an example. You can't put the wet laundry out on the line Friday night right before Shabbos. No one should be choshed you're doing laundry on Shabbos. We know of other examples. Because it's so easy to do what? To judge someone in a negative way. And by the way, if I feel bad about myself, I always want to put you down. If I feel bad about myself and I'm down about myself, I'm going to project myself onto you. and I'm going to be looking. You shouldn't be such a tzaddik. Why is it that in the newspapers, right? There, you know that, what's it called? Megan's List? You know, there's a list of pedophiles and sexual offenders in every zip code. Correct? But why is it that the only ones who make it onto the newspaper and on the news are priests? They're not the only sexual offenders, because people want to put down the religious. White collar crime. Okay? There is a certain percentage of the population that is in violation of white collar crime. And unfortunately, it exists. But why is it that the ones we have to read about in the newspaper are always the Orthodox Jew? Because people, you know, you're not so religious after all. You know, they love to put people down. They love to judge someone into sin. So that's a problem. And you say, well, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't say one word of Lashon Hara. I didn't say one derogatory comment about that person. You know what? You sat and played God Almighty. And you're not God Almighty. Who are you to sit in judgment? Even if you never even shared that thought. And even if you didn't act, how do you know that you didn't act upon your judgment? You don't know what's going on subconsciously. You don't know what's going on unconsciously. And that's a real challenge. Let's read the Rambam inside. Omer belibo sheino chet. I didn't sin. Lefishomer, what do I say? Did I ever do anything against him? All I did was suspect him. Shema asa olasa. I don't realize. She said, Abam, it's a terrible sin. Shemesim adam kasher bedaito kebalaveira. Because I've set up, I've become the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury of this person. And I've defined him. I've put you in a box. You're cheap. You're dishonest. You're whatever. You're arrogant. Who am I to sit and play God Almighty? We have an institution in Halacha called judge. Justice. You know why? Because if you would, the Rav used to say this, if you wouldn't have Dayanim and you wouldn't have a judicial system and a judiciary, you know what would happen? You'd have anarchy. We'd eat each other up alive. Ish Esrael Chaim below. I'm borrowing that from a different context. Ish Esrael Chaim. We literally swallow each other up alive. So there's a matter, there's a license to engage in judgment. But only what? If there's a specific protocol taken, and that's the pasuk that those of you learning the Daf Yomi, Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kel. Only when God is there, only when God gives license to it. And that's the problem of being a kosher b'kshei. Because you don't think you've done anything, because you haven't acted upon it. You don't think you've acted upon it. How do you do tshuva? That's halacha dalet, halacha hey. The third category this evening that we're speaking about. The Rambam says, Umehen Chamisha Devarim, five of the 24 phenomena fit this category of halacha hay. Ha'osa osam yimashech achareyam tamid. When you engage in these practices, you just get caught up. It becomes habitual. It ends up shaping your character. The kashim heim lifrosh mehem. It's extremely, extremely difficult to pull back, to remove yourself, to separate yourself from these mentalities, these character traits. L'fichach, tzarech adam, l'hizahar mehen, shema yidbak behen. You have to be very careful, lest you attach yourself, you cling to this, it becomes a part of you. V'hein kulan deos ra'os ad me'od. The examples the Rambam's going to give are terrible character traits. What are they? The Elohim. By the way, let me repeat that. Kulan deos ra'os ad me'od. The Rambam doesn't usually jump and say ad me'od. You know, the teacher says you have to have an essay of 500 words, 1,000 words. I apologize, it's dropped. Is this still working or did it stop? Is anyone technologically adept here? Is it still playing?
Yeah.
Okay. For those at home, we have a little bit of technical difficulty. We're back in action. So So what is this? He uses ad me'od. You have that 500 or 1,000 word essay. So you write very much, very, very much. You know, little kids would do that. The Rambam is not a little kid, and you know the Rambam, if anything, there was a tremendous economy of scale in the way that he wrote. Here he says these are not just cool and deos well, so not just bad character traits, ad me'od, they're very bad. Number one is rechilus. We have a term for that in Yiddish, a yenta. Right? Sophisticated people speak about ideas and concepts. Small people, we refer to them as kleine Kepala, you know, not broad people. They love to talk about other people, even if it's not negative. They're just the yakking, they're like a hen in a chicken coop. You know, never, just always talk, where this one's going on vacation, what this one's doing, what car they bought, you know, what they're doing, and which they did this, and they're dressed like that. Just, rechilus, you go from one to the other, you talk about the other people. You get into that mentality, that modality, just talking about what other people are doing and what. It's very difficult to break from. The second example is Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, again, you're sitting there playing God, but you're actually acting. You're not only playing God, you're acting as if you're God. Because you're character assassination. In general, it's not true of everyone who says Lashon Hara, but in general, when we say Lashon Hara about others, there's usually an insecurity that we have. And the way that we put other people down, we bring them down to our low level. You know, it's one thing if we become bigger and greater people, but it's much easier to bring someone down to our level. We knock them. We knock what they do, what they are, or we knock their motives, and it's very difficult. You get caught up. You know, it becomes a part of you. Baal Chema, anger. You know, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, when he speaks about the Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, the Rambam says the perfected human being is a person who's emotionally very stable, psychologically stable. They're not a person of extremes. The Rambam says, you know, when you use extremes, when there's a sickness, I'll give you an example. If God forbid someone has cancer, we have to radiate. We have to use chemotherapy. You know what happens if you have a normal body and you start radiating and using chemotherapy? You kill off cells. You destroy organs. It's a poison. You only use poison when there's a real sickness. So when you go to an extreme of a certain personality trait, the Rambam says, when you have a flaw, when you're to the other extreme, to bring you into the middle, to bring you, let's say, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you're a 2, to bring you into the realm of being a 5, you go out and you act like an 8. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're a miserly person. The only way to break you from that miserly mentality is to be a term, spendthrift? Is that the term I'm looking for? What? Spendthrift? You know, to spend and spend in an unhealthy way, but to do it in a way to such an extreme that will pull you from a 2 into a 5. That's the typical midah, the typical character trait. The Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, is right down the center. What about when it comes to anger? You know what the Rambam says? The extreme of tolerance. The extreme of patience, that's the golden mean. The golden mean is not a 5. The golden mean is a 1. We know it when we get angry. We lose rationality when we get angry. We think we're rational. I know when I get angry, I think I'm rational. But I'm not. After you calm down, you look back at yourself, and your judgment is flawed. And it's very easy to, once you stop losing control of your anger or your temper, it's very easy. It becomes a part of you. The next phase is Baal Machshava Ra. I'm going to skip for time. The next example the Rambam gives is HaMischaber LaRasha. Someone who becomes friends with a sinner. It goes back to what we've said twice before this evening. We are not philosophers, most of us. Most of us are not philosophers. We're not people who live in a vacuum. We are products of our society. We're products of our friends. We're products of our neighborhood. We're products of the people we interact with at work. I mean, I'll give you a simple example. Watch someone who has a certain type of vocabulary. Then they go into a workplace where different vocabulary is used. Watch that very same person. Watch how their vocabulary shifts and changes. I'm not just talking about using curse words. I'm talking about speaking in full sentences as opposed to phrases. So you see it. Diligence. I'll give you an example. You're in a community where being on time means you come 10 minutes early for sure. Okay? You've been in a community, and that's just expected, and that's what's demanded. If they're going to give you a keyboard, they're not going to give it to a guy who shows up late for sure. Then go to a community where that's not the case, where if I make it for Yishtabach, I made it. You watch the person slowly but surely how they change. You know what I'm saying? We're a product of our environment. So someone who befriends wicked people, sinners, and by the way, why do we befriend sinners? I'm not talking about someone who really believes that they can have an influence and they're really the Shem Shemayim and they're going to influence a person. I'm talking about, if I could use an example, the most popular genre in terms of viewership, the most popular genre in American films is mafia films. Why? Why are Americans so in love with Tony Soprano? Why is it that Americans, love The Godfather, Don Vito, Michael Corleone? Why? You know why? Because via osmosis, what I wouldn't do, that's not preposterous for me, but my Yetzer Hara, that's what I'd really like to do. If I didn't have the fear of God, if I didn't have the fear of my neighbors, if I didn't have the fear of the authorities, that's what I'd like to do. We live vicariously through Tony Soprano. In fact, we joke, Shlita, right? Dan Vito, all of a shalom, right? We joke about it, but there's a reason. A mischaber la Russia, because what is it? You live vicariously through it. You're in your house. You got to be honest. You got to be in touch with your subconscious, or in this case, sometimes it's just plain old conscious. Listen to what the Rambam says. Mitnei shehu lo made me masa. In the end, the osmosis, you end up learning from those activities. You learn from their speech. You learn from their activities. You learn from their mentality. They leave an impression in your psyche. Nirshamim belibo. They leave an impression in your psyche. Amar Shlomo, what does Shlomo say in Parak Yud Gimel of Mishlei? Yeroach Svilim Yeroach. The one who's a companion of fools or base people, he himself, he will suffer as a function of that. These Gimel, Dalet, and Hay we analyze. In the remaining time, we're going to take a few examples of Halacha Aleph and Halacha Beis. We're saving Halacha Vav to the end, because I don't want to depress everyone. That's why we're going to save Halacha Vav to the end. Take a look at Halacha Aleph. Arba Mehen Avin Gadol. Four of the 24 fit into this category. It's a great sin. Va'osa Echad Mehen Einekadosh Baruch Hu Maspik B'yado Lasas Tshuva L'chi Godel Cheta. This sin is so great that the Almighty, through providence, doesn't allow the person to do tshuva. What does he mean? This sin is so great that you're not afforded the opportunity to do tshuva. So Aleph, the first example is a machati asarabim. You cause the masses to sin. Let's take Yeravim ben Nevat, because his ego couldn't tolerate that here he is, the leader of 10 out of 12 of the tribes of the Jewish nation. In come Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, he's got to show up to the base of Mikdash. He's got to stand like everybody else. Umikdash itiro, you have reverence for the Mikdash. You don't just sit. Can't take a Joe Namath Easy Boy recliner. Kick back, have a cigar, pretzels, and a beer, and watch Monday Night Football. Oh no, in the base of Mikdash, you don't act that way. You stand out of respect. One person can sit. The Melech. because of another factor called Som Tassim Alecha Melech, the famous mitzvah in the second Aliyah of Parsha Shoftim. Should place Som Tassim, should place over yourself a melech, an executive. There has to be a sense of awe, a sense of respect, a sense of reverence. Right? In America, we have a problem. We refer to our presidents by last name. You know, Slick Willie, you know, Obama. No, it's president. Whether you agree or disagree, whether you like or do not like the job the president's doing, there's respect for the position. You don't refer to them as Slick Willie. You don't make fun about how President Bush pronounces the word nuclear, because in the South some people pronounce it nuclear. You make a joke of him, Jay Leno in Saturday Night Live. There's a sense of awe, there's a sense of respect for the position. So that melech sits in the base of Mikdash. Now what happens? That melech sits. Rechavam, Shlomo's son, that young whippersnapper who's wet behind the ears, who I can do circles around, I'm going to stand like everybody else, and he's going to sit. Oh, his ego couldn't. Yerubim ben Nevat's ego could not tolerate that. So what does he do? What does he do? He takes his military and he posts them at the border and prevents anyone from going to Yerushalayim, anyone from going to the Mikdash. And he establishes two Mikdash, you know, two, so to speak, altars of his own. One in the south of the country, in Beit El, the south of the area of Ephraim, and the other way up north. Many of you have been there in Dan. You know, there's a great hike that you do there. They turned it into a nebuch. They turned it into an altar of Avodah Zarah. You see Sheva Farms. You can see Syria. You can see the Hermon. You can see Lebanon from there. I apologize. There's a name for that area. Heldan. Thank you. Yeah, David, thank you. And the walk, you know, it's not far from the Banyas. It's a nice little... in the north and in the south, he establishes two altars. That was the beginning of the slippery slope that led to the destruction of the 10 northern tribes, who Nebuch, we refer to as the 10 lost tribes. Why are they lost? Because they were lost to the Jewish people. 10 out of 12 tribes were absolutely lost, because when they were driven off the land by Ashur, by the Assyrians, they weren't coming back. They assimilated amongst the nations. What does Rabbi Akiva say in Sanhedrin? Aseres Hashvatim Einam Chozrim. They're not coming back. They're not doing. They're not coming back because there's nothing left. They've intermarried out. Nebuch. So Yerubim ben Nevat is going to cause the majority of the Jewish nation to sin. These altars became very quickly sources of Avodah Zarah. He's going to be able to do tshuva. He'll have a lichta to Gan Eden, and they're all going to be lost. They're going to, so to speak, you know, using a Christian term, burn in Gehenna. No. Ein maspik b'yada lasas tshuva. The Rambam says, God through providence does not afford such a person the ability to do tshuva. The Rambam gives an example. It's not just the Rabbin. Hamatas chaveru miderech tova lederech ra. You take someone, you corrupt somebody. You take a good, decent person and you corrupt them. You go and meisis umediach, right? You seduce them. You seduce them. You use your charismatic, psychological power over them. Rambam gives halacha gimel. This is a tough one. Haroa beno yotzei detar busro ve'inu memacha biyado. You see your child going off the derech. You don't protest and you don't stop them. Now, I want to make a comment. There are many times in life where a parent is the last person to do something. Maybe as a parent you try to get this one or the other one to do something. But as a parent, if you push too hard, you'll really push them off the cliff. Parent has to know boundaries, has to know when to say Atan, Atan Akafa Aleph, has to know when to say Dayenu. But assuming that you are in a position of influence, and that's a big assumption, very often it's not a correct assumption, but making the assumption you are in a position of influence, just let them go off and let them conduct themselves a certain way, whether it's business dealings, simple, this is not simple, not making a bracha, or whatever it may be. You were in a position of influence and you didn't use that influence? How can you do tshuva? They're off in Gehenna and you're what? And you should have a list of Gan Eden, you get the penthouse suite in Gan Eden? No, it doesn't work that way. The last example, which is, I always said, when I went to California, this halacha wasn't as significant, but here, back in the East Coast, it is. You get two decent months. And imagine, out of those two decent months, you know, 3 or 4 weekends it's going to rain. You know, it's not like you can do something on Sunday. You say to yourself, hey, this is the summer. This is the time to have fun. This is the time to live it up. The weather's going to change after Labor Day. I'll be a good boy 10 months a year. I'll make change for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, but I'm going to live it up this summer. Right? Echata the Ashiva. I'll sin now, and I know there's a concept of tshuva. I'll do tshuva. Echata, I'll sin now, and Yom Kippur will be mechaper. Yom Kippur will atone. It doesn't work that way. Yom Kippur and tshuva is not some lucky charm. It doesn't work that way. There's a corruption there. There's a corruption. It's a warped notion of what God is and what your relationship with God is. Tshuva works when there's a real transformation. Tshuva doesn't work. Yom Kippur doesn't work when you use it, you know, as some magical wand. Oh no. So a person who says that, listen to the language of the Rambam. It doesn't say, but the point is going back to the earlier language in the halacha. What does he say? Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mastik B'yado Lasas Tshuva. God does not afford that person, allow for that person the ability through providence. You know, they don't have the ability to do proper tshuva. Halacha Beis, which we're going to basically skip. I'm going to spend 3 minutes on, and then we're going to conclude. But please feel free to look at it at home. Halacha Beis is 5. Umein chamisha devarim. Hanoalim darfik. There are 5 phenomena that you lock the door on doing tshuva. You've locked yourself out from doing tshuva. Let's just quote some of them. Haparish min tzibur. You're keeping, you're observant Jew, but you dissociate yourself from the community. There's a concept of the community, you know. Community is involved in tzedakah, the community is involved in introspection, whether it's issues of lashon hara, whether it's issues of sinas chinam. And you know what? The fact that you've locked yourself away, you don't partake of the community, which engages. You know, the community has a personality of its own. And by the way, the definition of a Jew, you should know this. The reason, Rabbi Zucker said this, the reason why we don't name the baby girl until Kriyas HaTorah, we don't name the baby boy until the Bris Milah, why not? Why can't you name the baby when it's born? Because a name is what? You know what a name is? It defines and demarcates your unique, distinct personality. Your name is what makes you unique and distinct. Right? I'm Shmuel ben Yoshua Levi Vial. There's only one Shmuel ben Yoshua Levi Vial in this town. It makes me unique and distinct. I don't have a unique, distinct personality until I become part of the Tzibur. Until I enter the covenant of Bris Milah, or a baby girl doesn't need a Bris Milah, until she becomes, like, what does it mean by Kriyas HaTorah? Until she participates, or the family participates in the communal activity of the Kriyas HaTorah, the davening B'tzibur. Until she's part of the community, she doesn't have a unique, distinct personality. No such thing as a Jew being an individual. Our very definition. Why is it that the time, the chasana, which on a personal level is the greatest simcha in someone's life when they get married? Why is it that the groom wears ash? The bride doesn't wear the golden and silver tiara? Because when your people, when your nation are hurting, when there's a deprivation of simcha for your nation, for your people, you can't have a complete simcha. By definition, we're not just individuals. Part of our very definition is we're part of the covenantal community, the B'nai Bris. Beis, HaCholek al Divrei Chachamim. You reject the words of Chazal. The words of Chazal is the water that we swim in. It's the oxygen we breathe. If you make a joke and not, and you have nothing to do with the words of Chazal, how can you ever do tshuva? That's the whole lifeline that we have to understand the system of the Torah. I don't think that needs explanation. And that's a big problem, by the way. In certain parts of our community, the modern Orthodox community, there's this notion that I'm a balabas, you know? Moshe Feinstein, the only difference between me and him is he had more facts. You know, if I had the facts he had, I can also make a psak. I can also make a determination. That's such a rubbish, that's such stupidity, and it shows a total ignorance of the system of the Nesorah. But that's the way people think. And now with the internet, right? Everybody can blog and they can espouse your philosophy, your superficial, childish philosophy of Judaism, without any appreciation for the words of Chazal. Gimel, hamalig al mitzvah, someone who mocks the mitzvahs. We don't know the depth of the mitzvahs. Tamei mitzvahs is how we taste, how we experience. It's a subjective relationship to the mitzvahs. It's not why God gave us the mitzvahs. We don't know why God gave us the mitzvahs. And if we know part of why God gave the mitzvahs, let's take matzah, let's take Korban Pesach or Maror, maybe that's one dimension of why God gave us the mitzvahs. We don't know. We're not God. We're not the infinite one. We have a frail, limited intellect. And for someone to knock and to put down and to treat lightly, people don't actually knock the mitzvahs, they treat them lightly. How can you ever do tshuva? When you, with your frail, limited human intellect, you sit and you're the balabas on, you know, what's wisdom and, you know, what should be employed and I'll pick and choose this and that. How do you do tshuva? With that attitude, you've locked yourself out. When you're cholek on chazal, when you mock the mitzvahs, what's the other example? Nevaza rabosa. You despise your teachers, the mentors of the generation. I'm not saying every rabbi is perfect, and I'm not saying that every rabbi is infallible. That's not our religion. But I'm talking about Chachmei HaMesorah. I'm talking about the masters of the Mesorah. And you sit, you know, and you call them misogynists. These morons and idiots, what do? They sit and they ascribe sociological reasons to Chazal. Because of their limited, frail intellect, they don't understand. The Rav has a beautiful talk on that. It's on BCBN. You can listen to it. You should hear the Rav in his own words. You know, these people who would sit, well, you know, the reason why that women, what happens is, the reason why the plight of the widower, the widow is greater than the widower, is because why? Because women couldn't work and they needed to be supported. That's like a projection of what you think the sociology of the times was. The Rav says no. It came from it's essentially part of the nature of the human condition. The Yishayach Teshuk HaSeach. To your husband you will cling. It's embedded in the very fiber of the human condition. It's an axiology of the human condition. And what happens? Yeah, you mock it. You put it down. You ascribe historical. You ascribe sociological. You ascribe psychological motivations to it. You've locked yourself out from tshuva because of your arrogance and your ignorance. Instead of having a reverence for the words of Chazal. I mean, Chazal said many things. And it doesn't mean Chazal were infallible. But that Ravina and Ravashi, 1,000 years later in the case of the Tanayim, or 500 years in the case of the late Tanayim, 200 years later in the case of early Amoraim, that Ravina and Ravashi would choose these statements to incorporate them into the Talmud Bavli that's going to last forever for posterity's sake, that means there was great chachma and great wisdom in every phrase and every statement. And to sit, there and be the arbiter and the balabas of that, you just lock yourself out from doing tshuva. And the same is true. We are a religion of Mesorah. Mesorah means a Rebbe Talmud relationship. And if woe to a person who has no Rebbein. And that, by the way, is a big problem in our community. I don't mean, you know, this is my rabbi, I'll choose this one to be the Masada Kedusha and read the Ketubah. I'm talking about a real rabbi. I'm talking about a rabbi where you learn the derech, you learn the methodology. You plumb the depths of the Mesorah with that person. And you have, and that person's obligated to find them. Sometimes you need more than one rabbi. Sometimes you have a great rabbi in halacha, you need a different rabbi for machshava and hashkafa. But a person who locks their rebbeim out, they've locked the door. And then the last example he gives is Soneas HaTochachos. Someone who despises reproach and rebuke. And I'm talking about the proper reproach. Proper Tochacha. If someone humiliates you, if someone is abusive to you, that's not Tochacha. That person is a sinner. I'm talking about... that's a great... I love that ringtone. Tis the season. Tonight's the first preseason game, so it's very appropriate. But what's Techacha? When somebody cares about you, and with Chachma, they're trying to steer you. They're trying to guide. They're trying to open up vistas where you can look at yourself and become objective about yourself. And people hate that, and they're threatened by that, and they despise it. A person can never grow if they hate reproach or rebuke. Person can never grow. And by the way, it's not easy. Let's be honest. Let's all be honest with each other. No one wants to be rebuked, even if it's sugar-coated. We don't want it. We don't like it. But that's the challenge that we have. We have to internalize that. We can't be objective about ourselves. And if it's someone who cares about us, we don't have a great ability of being objective about ourselves. Adam karov etzel atzma. And if someone cares about us and they do it in a way, sometimes, by the way, it's not going to work the first time. Sometimes they're going to have to come back to us 3 or 4 times. We're just not capable of hearing it. We're too insecure. But maybe after the 4th or 5th time we can hear it, and then we can grow and we can expand. And you have to love that. You have to, not only love it, like, ooh, it's delicious. I'm talking about love it meaning you want to grow. You want to be open. You want the opportunity to become a better person. The Rambam ends, and this is where we're going to end with the Lachavad. And this is after hearing the 24 phenomena that make tshuva sometimes near impossible, that make tshuva very difficult. Either because we treat something lightly, we don't think there's anything wrong with it, or because we've affected masses and we don't even know who to go to ask mechila from, or because the sin is so significant, or because we've locked the door on ourselves. Whatever the 5 categories are, look at what Halacha Bav says. Kol elu hadvarim kayotzei bahem. These 24 phenomena that we fit into 5 categories, and other phenomena like them, even though they preclude tshuva, they don't totally prevent a person from doing tshuva. Ella, but rather, if a person is willing to do tshuva, they're willing to unlock the door, they're willing to realize, you know, that certain things that they thought were okay are not okay, they're willing to, you know, go to extremes and to do the proper tshuva, hareze bal teshuva. Let's quote that phrase again. This person, even in the scenario of these 24 phenomena, this person, if they're really sincere and they're willing to go to the end of the earth, that person is a bal teshuva. And yesh lo chelek la'olam haba. And that person is a perfect person and will lead, you know, an eternal life. Now, what does that mean, hareze bal teshuva? We have a mistake. We use a certain vernacular phrase. We have BTs and we have FFBs. The Rambam didn't use our lingo of BTs and FFBs, from birth versus bal teshuva. The Rambam held that the great, great madrega that we should all strive for, in other words, if we're looking to grow and to develop as we approach Chodesh Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we all should want to be called or be referred to as Balei Tshuva. Whether you were born the son of the Rosh Hashiva, or whether you were born wherever. The great, great bumper sticker that we should be zocha to have on our automobiles, or so to speak, the great tag that we should have on our clothing, should say, I'm a Baal Teshuva. It's a big madrega. Because it's one thing if you've never sinned. It's another thing if we've made mistakes, and we've gotten caught up in a certain lifestyle and a certain mentality, and that we can ultimately look at ourselves, transform, perfect ourselves, through help of others, through help of Rebbein, through help of the Masorah, through the works of the Rambam and the Rebbeinu Yonah. If a person can attain that level, it's a great, great approbation. It's a great, great madrega to be a Baal Teshuva. In this time of year, it's something that we all strive to be. We all strive to be referred to, specifically by the Almighty, but by others as well, that they should call us a Baal Teshuva. Thank you.
You just press that.